Today on the podcast, I had Annie Yach. Wow, you guys, get ready to have your mind completely melted. Annie is not your traditional CTO. She's a chief transformation officer that works with investors, business owners, and entrepreneurs. Her superpower is uncovering things in your subconscious you didn't even know about. Things that are preventing you from growing your business, increasing your net worth, being a better leader, being happy, fulfilled, healthy. In this episode, she helps me dissect my subconscious live. So you're going to get a kick out of that. I have so many action items from this conversation that'll have an immediate impact on my life and in my business. In a world with either too much therapy or not enough therapy, you're going to love Annie's structured approach to identifying what's really holding you back. So without further ado, Miss Annie Yach. Welcome to the Real Freedom Podcast with your host, Ryan Weimer. Today, I am absolutely tickled. I cannot wait for this interview with Miss Annie Yach. Annie, how are you?
I am great. I'm so happy to be here, Ryan. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. We are going to dive deep into what's traditionally been maybe a bit of a taboo subject of mindset and trauma and unpacking layers beneath the surface that we didn't even know were there or existing, right? I'm so passionate about this subject because the power of this, I have felt just a small fraction in my journey. So I can't wait to really pick your brain and help the audience out here with whatever they're struggling with.
Well, I'm really glad to be here. And I think this is, at least from all the research I've done and all the people I've helped, I think this is like the key piece that if you can figure this out for your own life, everything starts to shift from money to personal relationships to how you engage with your family. I think everything is tied back to this.
Absolutely agree. Wonderful. So on this podcast, we always like to start with, what is your most beautiful failure?
Oh, I love that question. It's such a good one. You know what? My most beautiful failure is that, and I'm going to get real here. My most beautiful failure is that I was unable to create the relationship with my now ex-spouse that I always wanted to create because of the trauma that he and I had both been through. But I have to say that failing in that was what allowed me to develop all the methodology for everything that I do now. And I've helped thousands of people because of it. So great failure is a pretty amazing experience in life, I have to say.
Thank you for being vulnerable and sharing that.
Of course.
What kind of process does somebody have to go through mentally to turn a traumatic event in their life or something that holds maybe negative power inside their head or negative bandwidth, and then turn it into a positive, just like you said, of being able to impact people or really fill up their bucket?
Well, I know this might sound a little bit, simple, but I found that in order to manage a traumatic event that you've been through, you first have to look at what's the lesson that I'm taking from this traumatic event. Because so often, like in therapy, people will talk about their trauma over and over again, and it basically just builds the same loop or the same neural pathway. So there isn't a lot of change that's expected there. But in order to move forward from it, you don't have to go back into the experience. You just have to go back to the lesson that you learned. And then I think there's a lot more to that, but I think you also have to add in forgiveness, because there has to be a good level of forgiveness for yourself and forgiveness for the experience in order to move forward. Because if not, we get stuck in, that victim state, which, that's what drives so many people in this world into a less than optimized experience for themselves.
Yeah. Well, I think too, it's hard to talk about. Like, let's go to step one. We're in the middle of a hard experience or the trauma, right? What is like the main driver other than time? Obviously, but there is this like emotional process that we need to get through to where we're on some kind of firm foundation, if you will, to be able to even see what our goal could be or start thinking about that. Is there anything other than time that can help us maybe get through that a little bit easier or faster, or I don't know?
Well, I think that's a really great question because, you know, we all assume that time is going to make it, you know, go away faster. The feeling won't be as powerful. What I've seen be very helpful for a lot of people that I've worked with is if you want to get rid of the emotional charge of the trauma, which is obviously any trauma is a perceived loss of control. So most of us think of trauma and we're like, oh, it has to be a big trauma. It really doesn't, because if you think about it as a child, it could be just a moment where that child perceives that he or she has no control. And so I think the first step is always, can we get rid of that emotional charge of the trauma? Can we look at it from an observer perspective so that it's not as personal to us? And that's a really hard thing to do, right? Because the trauma feels personal. It feels like it's part of our story and that we have to live there. But for a lot of the young people that I've worked with in the past, or even the entrepreneurs, if they haven't done any level of therapy or if they haven't done EMDR to remove that emotional charge, the very first thing I do with most people is a process called, I call it now the golden coin process, where we're looking at what is the highest high in your life? What is the lowest low? And how do I identify the pattern that is between those two things that becomes the trauma pattern or trauma cycle that it's very hard to get out of until you see it? So basically the first step before anything is making that subconscious pattern something that you can see in your conscious mind so you can decide, you know, I'm ready to look at that and I'm ready to maybe let that go.
Oh, I love that. I love that. Do you feel like people are receptive to that? Do they fight it at first? Is there like maybe a step A before you can even get to unwinding of that process? Or
well, I think for most people, you have to make a choice, right? You have to decide that, and this sounds, I think, rough for most people, but we have to decide, I am the person that is in charge of my life. I am fully accountable and fully in ownership of what I am creating, because each one of us creates our own reality 24/7, all day, every day. And until we're ready to accept responsibility for that reality, it can be very difficult to look at those trauma patterns. But I think it all comes down to, and that's why I like this process, because I don't have to tell someone what the trauma pattern is. The way the process works is they will start to see their own trauma pattern and then be like, oh my God, I've been stuck in that just in different contexts for probably the last 40 years of my life. So it's very helpful when somebody doesn't have to show them the trauma, that they can find it on their own and be like, oh my gosh, how did this just happen? I've just found it's really difficult to siphon through all your subconscious thoughts unless you have somebody there sort of guiding you in that process.
Yes. So let's talk about therapy a little bit. So Sure. Me getting a bit vulnerable. So my parents both got divorced when I was 3 and then got remarried a few years later. Now, it wasn't a messy divorce by any means. I saw one of my parents during the week, one of my parents during the weekend, and they were both living close to each other. And like, it was, I guess, friendly, let's call it. So it didn't really affect me. Now, later in life, I started, I don't know, depressed isn't the right word, but like I would come home from school and I would cry in like 5th grade. And I didn't know why. It was super weird. Like I was young, I played sports, I was getting good grades. There was nothing bad in my life at all. And that was a really weird thing for me to experience because I was just filled with sadness. And I literally didn't even, for years and years and years, I didn't know it had anything to do with my parents' divorce until like I went to therapy when I was in college and after college and started going through that super difficult process of unpacking those layers. And what I noticed about going through therapy is I had to go through multiple rounds of it before I could even get to that deepest layer and understand it. And so I think, what would you say to people that are just like, I don't need therapy, or I don't think it's right for me, or it won't help me?
What I would say to people who say that is I would say that therapy is a tool, right? And we all need tools in our toolkit. So therapy is a great starter tool to use just to bring more awareness to what it is you're experiencing, right? Because there was a story that 3-year-old made up about the divorce that made him sad that he couldn't understand until he got to be much older. Because when you're little, you could get shut in your room by your parent thinking, you know, the parent thinks it's time out, but you could think you're dead now because you can't interact with anyone, because little kids don't know the difference in spatial awareness, right? So there are so many things that if you're willing to be courageous and go after this, therapy is one of the great tools that exist. And it's a great place to start because you at least have a way to process externally and process out loud some of the things that you might have experienced when you were a child.
Got it. Okay. That's super insightful. That makes a lot of sense. Do you feel like therapy is improving in terms of like awareness and openness about the subject? Like the running joke with people our age, I'm a millennial, is like, yep. Oh, our parents are too stubborn to like think that therapy is a good thing, right? And in our generation, it's a little bit more acceptable. And then maybe in Gen X, it's almost too much. Like you need to go to therapy for everything. Right. So I'm curious your take on like that swing across generations. Do you think we're in a good space now in society with how we view therapy?
I think it all depends on the person, really, how we view therapy. I think that, you know, I think as a society, we're having more challenges with mental health. And I think that therapy, again, is one of the tools for that. But I also think that there are so many other tools that can be used that are pretty significant as well, depending on the health of the person. So for me, I think the thing that was frustrating for me when I was in therapy with my ex, and then because we did a lot of work on our marriage for probably 15 years, the thing that was difficult for me was it seemed like we were always talking about the same things, but we never had an action plan. We never had a way to move forward. It would be like, we go to therapy, we talk about the issues we have with each other. And then it would be like, well, why don't you guys work on this one thing? And we would leave. And on the way out the door, my ex would be like, I don't really want to work on that. And I don't really think it's relevant. And I don't really know why we're talking about it, because we talked about it in every session for the past 10 times. And so my goal really has always been, how do we make therapy, if we're going to do it, if we're going to talk about these things that have caused us some trauma, how do we do it in a way where we can get to the root of it as quickly as possible and then immediately put action into place? And so a lot of the people that work with me are like, an hour with you is like 30 years of therapy. And I'm like, yes, because we don't have time to spend hours and hours in therapy all the time. It's great to talk to someone. I think it's so important, but we have to get to the bottom of what the cause of all of it is and then immediately change the behavior. It's the behavior change that makes the big difference in our lives. But we don't see a lot of that sometimes coming out of therapy. And that's why, yeah, I think there's so many other good tools.
Incredible. Okay. So let's say I'm maybe a little bit older and I've never been to therapy and I've been through some hard stuff in my life though, and I carry that with me. Is it like, do we try to uncover the deepest trauma first? Maybe there's multiple things that have happened to me in my life. Is it useful to just kind of go a blanket approach just and group trauma into one bucket? Or do we really need to find like each and every source and work on those specifically before we move to the next one?
Well, I think there are so many good books out there that can help you sort of ease into it, right? There's the book, The Body Keeps the Score, which is all about figuring out in your body where you might hold trauma. So that's interesting to read through and try to discover. There's the book, The Mountain Is You, which was a fascinating read, trying to figure out, okay, what are these beliefs that I might have, right? Because beliefs also can contribute to trauma. And a lot of your beliefs come from that age where trauma hits you between the age of 5 and 11 years of age. And so what most people don't know is that literally we have a 5 to probably 11 year old running our businesses, because those stories from when we were in those traumatic moments were so solidified and so cemented in during that age range. And all we do is we keep recreating that reality for ourselves because we know we have the tools to solve for that particular trauma pattern. So I think that if we can remember that at all times until we resolve some of this, we've got a 7 to 11 year old running our Ferrari, right? As entrepreneurs, we're Ferraris, right? So yeah, if we have that 7 to 9 year old running our Ferrari, we have to really start being aware of what actions we're taking and why we're taking them. So if we start at a very simplistic level, we can start at, okay, let's look at the actions we're taking and look at what is the belief around why we're taking that action. And the way I like to look at it to make it really simple is, if you are living in a subconscious lie, you will be suffering in that area of your life. If you are living in a truth, you will feel more ease, more grace, more fulfillment. And so it's really helpful for people listening to write down maybe on a list or a sheet of paper, where am I suffering in my life? And then to look at the belief that you're holding in that space or in that area of your life to help you identify, oh my gosh, this could be a lie that my subconscious has told me just to help me survive.
Oh my gosh, I love this. Okay, so can we role play something right now? Okay. So here's actually a real struggle that I've had that's hit me pretty deep. I'm going through, in business, you have lawsuits and not fun things that you need to deal with, right? There is a particular one that it's not even about the money. It's changed my perception a little bit of people. And so like, I want to believe that people are inherently good and do the right thing and want to help each other. However, lately, obviously, because in my mind, I hold negative consequences or negative things that happen to me in a higher weight than positive things, right? So if I have 10 positive things that happen to me, but then one negative, that's going to like cancel each other out, even though it shouldn't, right?
Right.
It's going through this process. It's now every time I have a difficult or confrontational conversation with somebody, I automatically don't trust them. And so it's almost like an abused dog type of thing where like I always, now my assumption isn't to trust someone. It's I don't trust them and I'm looking for a reason to trust them. I hate that I feel like that because I don't want to. It makes me feel like I have maybe just a tainted look on humanity. Like I want to live in a world of good, you know, and feel good.
Right.
So what would you take away from that as something I should work on?
Well, the first thing I would tell you is that obviously there's suffering there, right? Because you've created a reality where you don't trust the person, you're looking for a reason to trust them, which means you're in distrust more often than not, right? And what happens in trauma patterns is they try to isolate you either from something higher, like higher power, or they try to isolate you from yourself, or they try to isolate you from other people around you. So we know this is a trauma pattern because you're isolating yourself from people around you, right? You're choosing, I have to keep myself safe. They're over here, I'm here, right? Mm-hmm. Now, if I was looking at this, the first thing I would think is, okay, we've got to rewire this. We've got to unravel this for you. Because if not, you're going to spend most of your life walking into scenarios with energy that is shut down. And as we know, energy is what allows for opportunity and abundance and possibility, right? So the very first thing I would want to know is, well, I probably share with you the formula for connection, because if you have a formula for connection, you can live into that formula, which is a foundational truth, then it's going to shift you a little bit intellectually out of this lie. The problem, though, is when you are in trauma search situations like what you just described, there's an intellectual way you have to handle it. There's an emotional way you have to handle it and get after it, unravel it. There's the somatic, which is in the body, process you have to let go of. And then there's the neurochemical side. And the neurochemical side is the side where you've already created a neural pathway to not trust people in your brain. And you've been firing down that pathway so much that it's almost like a four-lane highway. And what we would want to do is we'd want to look at that four-lane highway and start to redirect you onto like a side country road with a brand new thought. So usually the formula for connection helps supersede that thought. So the formula for connection is, in order for me to be connected to another human being, to get past trauma, I have to be authentically myself. I have to be vulnerable. And I have to give trust. So I have to have all three of those things happening in order for me to connect with another human being. So I would have you look consistently during your day. Am I in connection with this person? Am I vulnerable? Am I being authentically myself? And am I giving trust first? So we practice having you give trust first intellectually, even though that's only one part of the four, because we have to start somewhere. Does that make sense?
It makes a lot of sense. I love that. As you were speaking, I was thinking about the applications already that I could do for that. Let's talk about self-talk.
Sure.
So as I'm going through this process, my mind is already thinking about things that I could do. It's hard to always have positive self-talk.
Correct.
But it is powerful beyond measure, I think. What are some applications of self-talk? Like, how do you describe self-talk to people?
Well, I think the thing that I've noticed about self-talk is I talk about almost like a reframe, right? So any negative thought that comes to my head, I'm as quickly as I can trying to reframe it to be something that is on purpose or positive, right? Now, it doesn't mean I don't sit in emotions that are difficult. I do for sure. But we get stuck in a lot of what I see the most of with entrepreneurs is self-doubt and self-questioning. Right? No, we're never overanalyzing in a positive way, right? We're always overanalyzing in a negative way. So for self-talk, I talk about it more as we're going to reframe it to a truth. So the one question that I have everybody ask themselves as I'm doing coaching is I say, okay, the most important question of your life is the question, what do I want to be true? Because again, if we're creating our own reality all the time and we have the chance to be in self-talk, whether it's negative or positive, we want to make sure that we're reframing it for the truth, because we know if we live in our truth, everything in life gets easier. So for example, if I'm having a really bad day and I'm like, gosh, I just can't get this right, or you know, I'm not creating enough breakthrough with people and I start getting down on myself, then I will literally be like, okay, what do I want to be true? I want it to be true that every time I interact with someone, I uplift their life. What do I want to be true? Every time I interact with someone, I want to make sure that they feel the love and connection that I pour into them, right? Every time I connect with someone, I want it to be true that I feel at the end of the day satisfied because I've made a dramatic change in their world, right? So I have to ask that question, ask and answer it over and over and over again to get my subconscious brain to redirect off of the negative self-talk And then I have to live in that other reality, almost that parallel reality of the feelings of what it would be like to live in the truth. So I think a lot of people miss the feeling part. We're not here to like immediately intellectually change our self-talk. We're here to create like a secondary reality for ourselves where the emotion of the truth we can feel. And if we can feel that, then we can live there. If we can't feel it and we're just intellectually trying to say, well, stop being full of doubt or stop questioning yourself or, hey, you should do it this way instead, it's not going to resonate because emotion is what moves us forward.
I love that. Okay. So what you're describing is like, I think this is, it's so key. A lot of people, when they have that self-talk, it's either positive or negative, right? And it's black or white. And what you just described is like, no, we have to create a bridge towards another reality so that we can get there. But it's not going to be black and white. It's a journey. And we have to create the bridge.
Correct. And the bridge is being able to identify what is true, what do I want to be true, and then creating what that reality looks and feels like, and then allowing yourself to live there in the feeling of it for at least a couple of minutes. Then all of a sudden you're there and you're like, well, now I'm not being negative anymore. This is pretty great. How do I stay here?
Oh, I love that. Okay. I'm absolutely using that frame today and always.
Anytime you want.
I love it. Okay. Earlier you were talking about 5 to 11-year-olds have some type of trauma and they carry it with them. With the people that you coach and come to you, obviously they're coming to you because you're an expert. If you were to look at across all the industries that you've worked with and all the people that you've worked with, are there people that just have no trauma, or does everybody carry some varying degree of trauma with them?
So the best way to answer this is, and I know this is going to be a little out there probably for your audience, but
love it.
From what I've observed for 15 years, when we are born, we are like in complete connection to whatever our higher power is, right? Some might call it God, some might call it source, some might call it higher self. We're in complete connection to that. And as we go through our life, we get shifted off that center point by all these different moments where we don't have a perception of control. And as we get shifted off those center points, we have these beautiful lessons that then end up being the gift that we're bringing to humanity and to other people in our life. And we spend our whole life after those shifts in our early days reshifting so that when we end our life, we can be in direct alignment again. So I know that sounds very strange, but I fully believe we come to this experience because we want distinction. We want to feel both ends of the spectrum. We want to feel the love and the hate, the sadness and the happiness. And the only way to do that really is to go through traumatic experiences. So I do believe that every single person has some level of trauma. It's not that it's big and little, there's just trauma. Right? It's just perceived losses of control. But if you can identify what your trauma is, you actually at the same moment can identify what your calling is and what the lesson, the greater lesson is for you to bring to the world.
Love that. Okay. That was deep. That was
very deep, I know. And it's a little out there, which I completely appreciate. It's just the pattern that I've seen from all the years of all this work.
No, it makes total sense. Applying that to your coaching and entrepreneurs in business. Just for the listeners, like, what are some examples? Let's say I'm unwilling in my current state to address trauma in my life, and I'm carrying something with me from my childhood or from some kind of relationship or something. How can that negatively impact my business? What are some examples that you've seen in business?
All right, you ready for it? Let's get after
this
one. This is big. So if you think about being an entrepreneur to start, we are willing to deal with high risk all the time. And we're willing to constantly try to manage chaos, right? The only way we can do that is if we have trauma in our past that makes us feel like managing chaos is a good thing and that we're really, really good at problem solving, right? So almost every entrepreneur, well, I would say every entrepreneur I've ever met has a traumatic pattern, right? Now, the key things that I've noticed is, especially for entrepreneurs, the trauma pattern that you are in will cost you money. It'll cost you relationships and it will cost you your family. And so what makes me sad is that almost every entrepreneur who finds me over time, they're coming to me because either their business it's stagnating, right? It's like hit a ceiling. It keeps bouncing off the ceiling, but it can't move higher. Or they're in a relationship and their relationship is being destroyed because they've been a workaholic most of their life and they haven't figured out how to balance. Or they don't have a good relationship with their kids and they really wish they were more connected to their kids. And so just to give you more specifics of that, I had one gentleman who came to me and he talks about this all the time on his podcast, how he had a fear of death. Because when he was 15, his dad died, and his dad only ever made a certain amount of money his whole life. And so in his subconscious thought as a little kid, he thought to himself, if I make more money than my dad did, I will die. So every time he got close to making over a set amount of money, he would get deathly ill, have to go to the hospital. His subconscious brain was literally creating insane sickness for him just because he thought if he went over that number in his head, he would actually die. So we did some work on the trauma. We were able to identify this. And then he was able to take his company public. He has made a lot more money now. He's acquired a ton of businesses. And he's literally like, if we hadn't worked on that one story, I would still be living it. So that's wow. One example.
That is fascinating. Fascinating.
I mean, there are stories after stories after stories. I mean, one gentleman had a $9 million mistake he would make like every 3 years. And he's like, why do I keep making these huge mistakes around money? We identified the pattern that he was trying to prove himself all the time instead of doing the due diligence. But his subconscious brain would push him to try to prove himself in a certain way. So he'd sign without really doing all the research. So once you identify that, from now on, you hire a team of people to do the due diligence for you. And now he's acquired a lot of companies. So it's so eye-opening because we can never see what that thing in the subconscious is. We can't see it because our subconscious runs 11 million data points every second. And the conscious brain only runs 40. So to pull something from the subconscious would take almost like an act of divine will for that to be pulled up for you to be able to understand what the connection is. That's why I love what I do, because every day it's like uncovering an incredible jewel and the person's like, oh my God, I totally see it now. And I'm like, well, now that we see it, we can change it.
That's so interesting. Oh. Yeah, that is wild. As entrepreneurs, we're inherently driven, right?
Yes.
And pain is a more powerful motivator than gain.
Yes.
How do we find that right balance? Like what I've noticed about myself, sometimes I will purposely put myself in pain or yes. some kind of scarcity because I've noticed it brings out the best performance in myself. And I think most humans are probably like that. Now, I don't necessarily think that that's a long-term formula for success, but like, how do we find that balance between inducing some amount of pain or being uncomfortable in our life, but not going so far overboard that it just becomes like a daily thing and it impacts other parts of our life?
Well, I think the pain question is a good one because everyone has their own level of pain that they're willing to suffer. So the thing I've noticed about entrepreneurs is you will suffer and you will use negative fuel to move you forward until eventually that program doesn't work anymore. It makes you too miserable. There's too much suffering. It's ruining too many relationships, or it's destroying your team's performance in business. Because that's something we didn't mention. But your team's performance in business is directly linked to whether or not you resolve your trauma pattern, because you will attract people in the same trauma pattern as you onto your team. And then everyone's stuck at the same level because the entrepreneur will keep jumping back in to try to save the ship. And the entrepreneur creates that because being needed is part of a trauma pattern, right? And so they're going to feel needed when they jump in to save the team. But I think that pain question, I noticed with a couple of like former NHL players and former professional athletes that I've worked with, they typically have created pain and suffering to propel them forward because of a hypercritical parent. It's usually the father that's incredibly critical of them at a young age. And so they create in their mind that I'll show him, or I'll show the person that told me that I couldn't make it. And they use that as negative fuel, and they create good success on that negative fuel until something else in their life starts unraveling. So yes. Typically it's the business side. You can, you know, drive towards a good amount of money, extreme good success, but then all of a sudden everything else in your life is falling apart. And so I would prefer that people do more of this work before they get to that point. But sometimes, you know, since everyone's pain level is customized, everyone has a higher, you know, has a different tolerance for pain. Sometimes you just have to go through it until you hit that wall and you're like, I can't do this anymore. And that is also you recognizing it's me. This is me that I have to change.
That was going to be my very next question. It's like, I sometimes will throw so much stuff on my plate and try to do a bunch of things because I want to see what breaks and what fails, because I want to, for me, that's like a faster way to come to that conclusion than kind of slow playing it. The problem is the consequences are way more severe, right? So how can somebody like systematically figure that out? Because what you're describing is like the term we use is chip on their shoulder, right? If someone's got a chip on their shoulder, it's because they're using some part of their life as this like negative fuel, but it's short-lived. So yeah, like how do we find that right amount?
Well, I think what I've seen the most is that once a person can identify why they're using the pain as their negative fuel, they can then be so aware of when they do it that when it comes up, And I'm thinking of one gentleman in particular. He went through a lot of pain in his life, and pain became the only thing that made him feel like he was being successful. And so once he identified the trauma pattern of the pain and how it would show up, now he knows when he goes into the pain, he's trying to sabotage his ability to create money now, because it reaches a point with all the pain where the pain or negative fuel becomes a self-sabotage. So again, it's that cycle, identifying the cycle and being able to say, oh my gosh, look, I'm in my cycle again. And then deciding, I don't want to be in the pain because I know the pain only gets me so far. And I hate using this word because it's overused, but like if I can get into acceptance and compassion around the pain, I can still feel the pain, but I want to have acceptance and passion for it. I don't want to make it bad. Then I can get into my heart space, which for a man, the hardest journey is going from the head to the heart. If I can get a man into the heart space, then he can start making decisions that resonate at a higher level with his higher self, where he wants to go in his life, what his purpose is, and then it changes the game. I think when people are in a lot of pain, it's because they don't really understand their higher purpose. And so that's a whole other process to take someone through to help them identify, okay, what's the purpose of your life and why are you here? And then they can see the pain or the suffering that they've created in the past isn't in full alignment with that higher purpose.
Love it. Okay.
At Offer Now Idaho, we're looking to hire A players to run our organization and help us grow our business.
Absolutely. And it's not going to be easy, but what in life is? You can choose your hard, you can choose to be poor, you can choose to be rich. They're both hard. Would you rather work for a company that has your best interests in mind and wants to push you to be the best version of yourself, where you actually can give back to the community and have a tangible impact in people's lives? You know, our motto is providing freedom to our team members, our community, and ourselves through real estate.
The whole reason Offer Now Idaho was created, I was a mechanical engineer, and I was just a cog in the wheel. At the end of the day, I was just a number. I got laid off once. I got passed up for a promotion multiple times, even though I was already doing half of the role plus my own. I wanted to be able to control my own destiny and impact others around me without having the handcuffs of a corporation and deal with corporate politics. Getting passed up for that promotion, already doing the work, I remember just feeling, am I really going to do this for the next 30 years of my life? I need to start taking control now. I need to go start something. I need to go build something that will attract other like-minded people that are seeking that, the ability to work remote, right? That want to be able to have an unlimited ceiling on what they can earn. And the results that they get have a direct impact on what they get compensated. You can't get that in a corporate job. Right now, we have a $3,000 referral program. If you know somebody that's looking for a new role, we will pay you $3,000 once that person is hired by us and they hit their 90-day mark. So if you know of anybody that's looking for a new job or looking to change their life, shoot me a DM at Real Ryan Weimer on Instagram.
Let's get it.
Let's talk about how gender plays a role in that.
Sure.
I'm sure with your experience, I'm guessing that males tend to have more ego and maybe bring more baggage into this kind of process that they really need more work with? Or like, what do you see gender wise as some things that we should just, you know, identify from the start that this is how we were made and what our instincts are doing and how we need to go about that?
Well, I don't know if it's completely based on gender. I can say it's based on the past 15 years and the people that I've worked with. And I would say the majority of the people that I've coached have been probably 70% male and 30% female. What I've noticed is that for the women that I work with, we spend a lot of time getting them out of victim mode, which is where you blame other people for what's going on in your life. Because when you go through becoming a mother, there's a significant change that occurs. You sort of lose your identity. You have to figure out who you are again, right? So that's a pretty significant traumatic event, let alone anything that happened earlier in your life. For the 70% that are men, you know, there are some people right off the top that I will not work with because the ego is too much and they're not willing to really look at themselves, nor are they willing to do the work. And so that skims people off the surface. But for most men, I find that there are typically a couple of big things to be aware of. There's this idea that who they are as an individual is not enough, that they have to provide more or do more. And this is similar to women as well. It just shows up in different contexts. But for most men, and they also tend to sacrifice themselves much like mothers do, for everyone around them on the provider side. And so a lot of the men I've worked with, they've grown up either in a single mom household or an overly critical father household. And those two different traumatic experiences cause them to be extremely difficult and brutal on themselves with regards to self-talk. And so you have years and years and years of very negative self-talk that's built up, and almost this desire to show people that they're more than what anybody ever thought they were. And so when you have that, combined with this feeling that they'll never be enough, they can go after money like it's more important than anything. And that's where a lot of the men lose their relationships or get to the edge of losing the relationship before they're willing to do some really deep work. So it's interesting to watch, because both men and women feel like they're not enough, but the context of how it shows up in their lives is very different. For women, it's they will sacrifice everything in order to make sure their kids have a good life, but they will not allow themselves to go after the relationship they want or the business they want or the power that they want to create for themselves in their career. And for men, they create a ton of power, a ton of value, a ton of success in their career, but then the relationships and the friendships and the family relationships massively suffer.
That makes a lot of sense. Like you mentioned before, the upside of this, of going through this hard work, and let's focus on the business element, right? How could changing the energy that I put out there, how, maybe provide like an example of how that could attract A players or better teammates in my organization.
So say you change your energy because you start to feel like you can trust people more. And whenever you walk into a room, you're not looking for people to prove you wrong. You're looking for people who have good energy like yours and they want to sync up with you, right? The number of affiliate relationships you can build, the number of partnerships you can build, the number of people that naturally come into your space that want to do business with you. And a lot of entrepreneurs get stuck in fight or flight, which causes their energy output to feel off to other people, to feel like they can't trust it. So the first step I tell people is it's really great to calm the nervous system so that when you walk into these spaces, people can be naturally attracted to you. And that allows you then to drive better relationships, better revenue. I think too, though, that in business, you know, you have so many factors that come into play when it comes to your energy. I mean, your energy, if you're having rough energy, you could hire the wrong person, right? And then you're going to have costs associated with that. If you have bad energy on a given day, you could say yes to a deal that's not supposed to be, like, it's not supposed to work for you. It's going to cause you issue later with lawsuits. You can also negotiate lawsuits very differently if you're not in fight or flight. And right. So I think that the biggest key for entrepreneurs that I've seen is first get out of fight or flight by going after the neurochemical side and then work on the trauma from there, because that gives you the biggest win possible. Because you're out of fight or flight, you're in a calmer nervous state, you're able to attract more of what you want. And everyone talks about abundance, but most of us as entrepreneurs don't think it's an easy thing to get to. It really is when your energy is where it should be. Because just to give you an idea, Ryan, when my ex-husband and I, we did a lot of work to calm our nervous systems because we were stuck at a certain revenue barrier for a long time, probably 8 years in business. The second we calmed our nervous systems, we tripled the revenue of our company. It was wild to watch the difference. And then people wanted to be around us. They wanted to do more with us. And we were just like, this is so wild. How is this happening? You know, it didn't make sense until we looked back at the fight or flight that we had been in as entrepreneurs that was causing such a change in the neurochemistry. So energy is everything. Energy is money. Money is energy. Energy is love. Love is energy. Love is money. So the more you can sync up all three of those, the better your life gets.
That makes a lot of sense. And I'm thinking about all the areas for improvement that I have as we're talking. Let's say I'm going through this process and I am taking action. I'm committed to improving my energy and getting vulnerable with myself. In that transition period, maybe there are decisions that I need to make that come up. And one side of me is saying, do this. Another side of me is saying, do this. And I'm guessing this is the old way of thinking, like the angel and the devil on either shoulder, right? The old way of thinking, trying to pull me back into scarcity. A new way of thinking, trying to pull me to abundance. What's maybe like a thought track or a frame I can use in that moment when I'm like, I'm just not sure what the right decision is?
So it all goes back to that question, what do I want to be true? Right? Because if you're fighting the negative side that's trying to drive you into scarcity and the positive side, if you ask, what do I want to be true? 10 out of 10 times we're going to choose, well, I want this track. I want the positive track over here. And then if we choose to answer that question and live into that reality, we can almost always make the best decision. Now, what I've done in the past with entrepreneurs is I run a process to identify their purpose. Once you identify the purpose, you have a bunch of questions that act as a filter to make quicker, better decisions, because it's so clear when you're aligned with your purpose. Oh, like any path is much more clear. So I think that if you can't do a purpose session to identify your new filter for how you look at your world, asking that question provides you a very quick new filter and allows you to choose between, do I want the good side or do I want the bad side? And how do I live in that good side?
Okay, perfect. I love how, like, in business, we take this logic-based application towards making decisions. And you're saying there's a same methodology to understanding ourselves and being the best version of ourselves and feeling the best energy of ourselves. And I love how the methodology you're describing, it's not like everyone wants to describe it as like, ooh, just be in touch with yourself and like kind of these loosely, like fluffy sounding ideas. And your approach is like so methodical that I can see how it really resonates like with your business person and entrepreneur, because they're like, oh, I can understand that process.
There's a system. I know how to do that. Process. Yes. That's what I've always tried to do, because it was so frustrating to me as an entrepreneur when someone's like, oh, just be the best version of yourself. Get 8 hours of sleep a night. And I'm like, that is not helping at all. Meditate for 10 minutes a day. I was like, I can't even sit still for 10 minutes a day. How am I supposed to meditate? So I heard all of that. And I'm like, that isn't helpful. That's not getting me to where I want to go. Where can I find the answers? To be honest, as entrepreneurs, we need systems and processes, because sometimes our brains don't work that way. They work that way when we're solving problems or we're coming up with a way to manage chaos. Sometimes we can't manage our own chaos. And so for me, there's a very specific way to go about it. You first do your process to figure out what the trauma pattern is. Then you do a process to identify your purpose so that you can be very clear on the filter, the new filter for making decisions. Then from there, you're going to bring together in harmony the young version of you and the adult version of you, so they can work together to solve problems. And then from there you go into, okay, now that I've got myself in a very good foundational state, how do I then work on unraveling these trauma stories that little 11-year-old kid has going on in his brain? So there's a process, there's a structure, there's a system. And that's what, for me, I was so thankful. Like, I look back and I look at my ex-husband as one of the probably the best guides or healers of my life, because if I hadn't been through everything with him to work him through PTSD and all the trauma of his life, I never would have been so ravenous to do this for other people. Because now it's like, there's nothing more fun than uncovering, okay, what's this one little piece that they've been telling themselves their whole lives that literally is the game changer? If they knew it, it would change how they interact with people. It would change how they run their business. It would change how they hire and serve their business. I mean, I love digging for the goods, the treasures.
Is that why you do it? Is it like that light bulb moment of somebody having this worldly realization?
Yeah, there's nothing better, Ryan. Because if you think about it, right, we spend our whole lives trying to create impact and meaning. But if in one moment you help somebody see the thing that's been in the gap their whole life, and from that one moment, you know, they're going to change the way they impact with their spouse, with their kids, with their business, with their clients, with their vendors, with everybody. And to think like maybe at a tiny little part of that process, the impact can be huge. So I love watching someone transform in front of my eyes in less than an hour. Best experience ever. And you know, they're going to keep that information with them and they're going to go into the world. It's going to be a ripple effect in whose lives they touch.
That's incredible. I 100% agree. Let's say severity of trauma is a spectrum, right? And like for me, my parents' divorce and everything, I would look at everything that everybody else goes through and determine that that's a pretty small trauma, although it's all relative to each person, right? If somebody goes through an intense type of trauma, does it usually take more time or does it not work like that?
It's interesting. When there have been extremely intense traumas that I've dealt with, the pull to stay in the old story is much stronger. So I wouldn't say that your divorce, because everyone has trauma from divorce, whether they think the divorce was or not, right? So I would never say that, oh, your trauma of going through divorce is worse or better than Larry going to war, right? You can't compare those two things, because for you, divorce might have been war for you and it hit you as hard as war. But I do think that when you've been running a particular trauma pattern for 40, 50 years, and somebody tries to interrupt that pattern, but you've dedicated and built quite a life around that particular trauma, you might not want to give it up. And this is where all the entrepreneurs say to me, everyone waits till the end. And then they're like, okay, so if I do this work, am I going to lose my edge? Am I going to lose that thing that drives me? And I'm like, here's the thing. What drives you is a skill that you developed based on the program of that young child making a decision that this is the only program that will keep me safe. That is a skill set that will never leave you. You will never lose that skill set. The only thing that you'll lose is you'll lose the 11-year-old driving your Ferrari. The 11-year-old will start to sit in the back seat and let you as the adult drive, which is where you make the most impact in your life. So I would say you become much less reactive when the 11-year-old is not driving the bus of your subconscious.
Makes a ton of sense. Yeah.
Yes.
So what's an example of something subtle that you see all the time that people do in business, that leaders do, that they don't even realize?
People will talk themselves out of a big career change or a big career elevation because of their subconscious programming. So for example, there might be an acquisition that a company wants to make, but the CEO will talk himself out of making that acquisition because he's like, I'm not ready for it. Mentally, it's not where I need to go. It's not as safe as this old feeling, because we would much rather stay in what we know than the unknown. And if we think about it, I always talk about like your penthouse life. The trauma pattern will cap you at a certain level of living because it thinks, I never want to lose everything that I've got. And there's a lot of fear in entrepreneurs that once they make a certain level of money, it's going to all be taken away from them. But the key is not that. The key is that you've now hit off the ceiling of where that trauma pattern is going to serve you. In order to go to the next level of who you are, you have to break through that trauma pattern and design a new program for how you want your subconscious to engage. And so for a lot of the entrepreneurs, if they can break through into their penthouse, it's scarier to go there because it's unknown than it is to stay in the old story. So that's why a lot of men over the age of 50, not many of them want to work on their trauma patterns because they've been in that pattern for so long and they think it's the only identity they have. The men that really blow my mind is when they come at me and they're in their 50s, they come at this work and they're like, I don't care what it takes. I can see the pattern. I want to get out of it. Teach me what to do. I'm all in. And they listen and they apply it. Some of those men over 50 have the biggest groundbreaking experiences of their lives because they break a trauma pattern that's been holding them hostage for 50 years.
Yeah. What percentage of the population do you think has a trauma pattern?
I think probably everybody has one. I think the degree of the trauma pattern and how it impacts your life is what is custom to the individual. So you can't say that anyone has gone through life and not have had a moment of a perceived loss of control. Even some of the most healthy individuals I've ever worked with, there was one gentleman, he's super happy, having a great life, making great money. He's like, I don't know, I don't think I have any trauma. Turns out when he was a little kid, age 5, his mom put him on a plane to fly to his dad across the Atlantic Ocean. And this little kid got on the plane and he decided that there was only that present moment, that there was no past, there was no future. Now, this is subconscious. So what happened to him as he grew up in business was he never planned, because in his mind, there's no past, there's no future. So why would I plan? So he spent a majority of his business life never planning anything. And he was in conflict with his wife because she wanted to plan vacation. She wanted to plan for their year together. She wanted to plan all these things. And their relationship started to unravel because he wasn't planning. And then his business partner came to him and was like, you're never planning in business. How are we supposed to move forward if we don't plan? Yeah. We'll never get through to our strategic goals. So he came to me, he's like, I don't think I really have anything. And we looked at it and he's like, oh my God, I never want to plan because I was on that plane and all I had was that moment. And I didn't know if I'd have anything in the future or anything in the past ever again. So that's the power of the subconscious and how much it can trick you. And it's sneaky. It shows up and it changes the context. Even when you think, oh, I think I've got this handled. I mean, I've been doing this for 15 years and there are moments where my subconscious messes with me and I'm like,
yeah,
so tricky that time.
Yeah. That's absolutely why I asked, because I can hear and see a lot of people that are watching this or listening to this that are like, my life's great. I haven't had a death in the family or a traumatic
childhood. I haven't lost a child. I haven't.
Yeah, exactly.
Those are not the traumas that we're looking for. We're looking for the smaller perceived losses of control. Maybe you got married too quickly. Maybe your sister beat you up as a kid. Maybe your brothers teased you. Maybe your brothers held you down and tickle tortured you. And something from that was this big program that your brain picked up on. Everybody picks up on different things. So if anyone were to say, oh, I don't have any trauma, I'm like, you might not want to go after the trauma, but it doesn't mean you don't have any perceived losses of control.
That is so true. So I think that's a really good action item for everybody on this call or everybody that's listening to this, is think about, and maybe Annie, you can provide a frame for this, but if I'm listening to this right now and I'm like, that's a really good point, I haven't had anything major happen in my life, at least that's my perception, how can I go about even discovering what that event is?
Sure. I would honestly start with the question of, what is the lowest point in your life? What is the moment that comes to your mind first? This is the lowest point of my life. That low point is almost always a trauma. And so what I tend to look at after that is I then say, okay, if we know that you got something, lowest point of your life, and it could be a period of time, like a couple of months, we go to that period of time and then we say, okay, what did I immediately learn in that moment? What did I have to change about myself to live through that moment? And you're going to be amazed with the things that you had to change about yourself to get through. That's the beginning of you understanding what that program is, because you changed in a certain way from that low point so that you could survive, so that you could almost like, so you could win at life. But what you didn't realize was that society would then reward you for whatever that program was. So it would try to sync up even more. Oh, this is a good program. I should keep using this over and over again.
Yeah.
That's how it becomes a little sneaky. So have you ever heard me talk about, there's a saber-toothed tiger story. It puts trauma in perspective for people. I don't know if you want me to go into that very briefly, but it sort of helps people understand.
Go for it. Yes.
So for anyone who's listening, if you're wondering, how do I really make this make sense to me? If you think about it like you're a caveman, we go back to cave person times. And as a cave person, you walk down to the stream and you see this really fuzzy orange and black rock. And you're like, oh, I'm going to sit on that fuzzy orange and black rock. You go to sit on the rock. It's a saber-toothed tiger. It rips off half your face. And so you get back to your cave. You patch yourself up. You're alive now. But what is the first thing your brain's going to do? Your brain is literally going to replay over and over again exactly what just happened to show you fuzzy orange and black things are dangerous. If I'm around them, I might die. Right? Now, this is where it gets crazy cool. Then the subconscious brain, as you sleep, replays the story over and over and over again, driving those neural pathways to create that highway. Fuzzy orange and black things are dangerous. Fuzzy orange and black things are going to kill me. You wake up the next morning. You look out of your cave. An orange bird flies by. You're going to shock. You're like, oh my God, is that a fuzzy orange and black thing? I don't know. I got to watch it. You become hypervigilant because you're watching for fuzzy orange and black things. You look out because you're thinking, oh, I want to go get some food. But behind every bush in front of you, you're thinking, what if there's an orange and black thing in front of that bush? So the thing that's neat about this is your brain starts to make you a very hypervigilant tracker of fuzzy orange and black things. It makes you probably the best hunter in the whole village. So everybody's going to reward you for being this amazing hunter. And as this amazing hunter, yes, you're on high alert. Yep, you're a little bit in fight or flight, but you're winning. You're not getting killed by the tiger. Now, this works really, really well, Ryan, until next door, the orange and black tiger-killing tribe moves in, and they wear the tiger pelts on their back. Literally, the environment has changed. That group of people are the best people for you to bond with and be a part of and spend time with, because then you could literally pick berries and not have to worry about fighting ever again. But because they're fuzzy orange and black pelts on their back indicate to you that they're dangerous, you're going to stay as far away from those people as possible. So this is where we have some story about a tiger. That tiger, we start to see everywhere. Then all of a sudden the environment completely changes. We could be around people who kill tigers. It'd be the best decision of our lives, but we can't make that decision because we're still in that fear state around the tiger because we can't tell that the environment has changed. So what I always ask everyone is, I'm like, think about what that fuzzy orange and black tiger is for you. What is that thing that feels that you have to be hyper-vigilant around? You have to be hyper-focused on. Maybe it's a skill set you developed and you want to look for that because that's also an indicator of where there might be a trauma pattern.
I love that analogy. It makes so much sense. And I think everybody that's listening to this has some kind of event or thing that's happened to them in their life that they can absolutely connect the dots to and then extrapolate it out of, oh, that's why I don't do this. That's why I don't put myself in uncomfortable social settings or whatever that trigger is. So Annie, I'm all bought in and, you know, I'm a business owner or maybe I work with my spouse. I have a business partner. They're not as convinced. Maybe it's probably ego or maybe they're not in a place in their life where they're ready to do that deep work and get vulnerable because it's too uncomfortable for them and they're trying to stay in that safety zone. I'm never going to convince my spouse that, hey, we should do this, or my business partner, hey, we should sign up with Annie and go through this deep work because it'll be life-changing and revolutionary. How should I go about that conversation with them?
So typically what I found, and I tell everybody this because sometimes people fly out to do two-day intensives with me where we do very deep work, and then they're so gung-ho and they want to tell everybody about it. I'm like, no. Here's what you do. You go home and you become the lighthouse. You become the lighthouse of change. And you show people through your behavior and your actions and this new way of being that you are forever different. And then people will start coming up to you and be like, wow, what did you do? What's different about you? What did you try? And at that point, when you have fully integrated the work that you have done, then you can support someone in going through their process. Because I think so many people have a great experience. They want to help others change and they forget that they're still in the middle of doing some of this work. So I always tell everyone, be the lighthouse. Don't be the tugboat. You can't tug people to their dramatic transformation. They have to make the choice and everyone's timing is different. So it's their timing, not yours. And if it is a spouse, what I typically say is, listen, if we want to talk, I would love to talk to the spouse and I'll help her identify what the pattern is, but then it's up to her to make the choice and she might not choose that now's her time. So I'm never attached. That's the best part of my job. There are so many people that need this work that if somebody comes to me and they're not ready or they have too big of an ego or it's not their thing, it's so easy to be like, listen, why don't you start with therapy or why don't you start with something else that could be helpful for you? Why don't you start with this book? And then people almost always end up coming back later on once they've done a little bit more work on themselves or once their ego has slipped because something in their life has been impacted by the trauma pattern.
Makes a ton of sense. Okay. That is super actionable, guys. If you're listening to this, absolutely being that lighthouse and being that magnet of showing people what it's like to be, to come to that realization and live that daily and just have that energy be infectious around people. It's not going to be an overnight process, but I love just that analogy of being that lighthouse and being that sense of warm energy. Let's go to the opposite extreme. And I kind of threw Gen X under the bus earlier in this conversation about needing therapy for everything. There is this thing where it's easier to be a victim. And I think sometimes people are just like, something happens to them and they're like, oh, now I need therapy for everything. What would you say to that extreme?
So, you know, I worked with the Navy SEALs for a long time because I was married to a Navy SEAL. I worked with Navy SEALs and then I worked bringing those SEAL mindset structures and systems to companies all over the country. And so what I learned from the SEAL team and what Jocko talks about a lot is extreme ownership. So the thing I wish that more Gen Xers would look at is how can I take extreme ownership for my life? And how can I make sure that even when I have these moments of falling into victim or I have moments of thinking that I have to do a ton of therapy, it's not the thinking that I have to do therapy or I have to try all these things to try to fix myself is the problem. The problem is thinking that you're broken to begin with. No one is broken. Nobody needs to be fixed. It's not what this is about. This is about up-leveling your awareness of yourself to take yourself to the next level in everything you do. So I wish that this extreme ownership was something that we could hold on to more often than not, but some people are very happy staying in their victim state. So again, it's based on the person, based on the choices they want to make, based on the reality they want to live in. And many people like that victim reality.
Yeah. Halfway joking about Gen X. Every generation poo-poos on other generations and like says why they're bad and life is too easy for them. And I think the irony of that is as entrepreneurs, I know what fuels a lot of people. I'm not necessarily saying that this fuels me, but I know that entrepreneurs will say things like, I'm doing this for my family. I'm doing this to create generational wealth. And it's funny how when it happens and their kids' lives are easier and better and their kids' lives are easier and better, and then we kind of shun them because life is too easy. And it's like, well, that was exactly what you said that you were trying to achieve. So,
well, Ryan, I gotta tell you vulnerably, right? My ex-husband and I, he was a Navy SEAL, right? We're both business owners now. We have determined that we have, well, in his words, we have loved our children too much because our little guy came home the other day from school and he had done something that was pretty rough. He had basically lied to his teacher, his cello teacher, and told his cello teacher that he didn't have his cello for 5 months straight, so he couldn't practice. Now, we were taking him to school every day with the cello. And when I asked him, I said, buddy, why would you lie about this when I showed him the email from the instructor? And he goes, and I said, you know, why wouldn't you want to take the test to get better at your cello? And he's like, well, mommy, I feel pretty loved. And I'm like, it's just a test. I mean, it's not going to tell me anything I don't know. And I literally looked at him like, you've either done something very right or something very wrong, because in our world, we needed the trauma. The trauma is what propelled us forward. But these little souls, it's so interesting to watch. And he's only 10, but he is looking for areas of his life where he can impact other people. He's not necessarily looking to impact himself as much as we all were from the trauma patterns. So I don't know if we're doing it the right way, because from early on, he's heard me talk about these things. But I think that it is definitely interesting to watch how in our generation, and I think in the generation before ours, we were more focused on, we have to suffer, we have to be in pain, we have to only if we're in suffering and in pain and we delay gratification, will we ever get where we want to go? But I think once I hit 40, I determined I needed to redefine success. Success needed a new definition. And most people think that success is going after a specific goal or getting to a certain revenue number, but it's not. Success is actually a feeling, and you can feel successful every single day if you change your definition. So I hope it's okay that I'm going to share with the people who are listening. If you can redefine your life and think of success as an optimized daily experience that you sustain over time and start looking at your life through that lens and creating, what do I want my optimized daily experience to be? You're going to feel a whole lot more fulfilled, and you're also going to experience more wins in your life. So that's just something that I think hopefully no matter what generation you're in, you can take that and use it and make your life what you want it to be. Because we only have really one chance here, right? So might as well make the most of it. Learn as much
as you can. Well said. I love that. In terms of one of the easier levers to pull, changing our environment or adding things and removing things from our environment, I don't know if it's going to another location, if it's maybe sticky pads on my monitor. Are there subtle tools or tricks that can help us be more open to this and like catch ourselves when we feel ourselves drifting into that subconscious?
Well, when I run a purpose session with people, I think using the questions there to define your filter, those questions are really powerful, because then whenever you want to make a decision, you're going back to those questions and asking yourself those questions out loud. So that can be very profound. But in order to shift the subconscious, it is really helpful sometimes to change your environment. Because every time you change your environment, like we used to bounce between Florida and Park City, because every time we changed the environment, it forced us into recalibrating our lives, into really looking for the areas where we felt more suffering or we felt like we were more reactive, because that change of environment will show you really quick, oh, isn't this interesting? Here's my subconscious trying to fight against this change. And what does this mean for me if I no longer stick to this program? So we actively did that as part of how we were living our lives and living our marriage and living our business, because we wanted to force our subconscious into those change states really quickly. But I think if you're looking to make changes, where you can start is really small, just with like different decisions and awareness of your behavior. Because if you think about something as simple as, say, drinking, everybody at the end of a long day, we don't have a lot of capacity left by the time we finally get home, if we've given up, if we've worked really hard throughout the day. So something that you can do just to build your awareness and build your ability to manage your subconscious is, instead of getting to your house and immediately going to like open a bottle of wine or going to grab a beer, pause. Ask yourself, do I really want this right now? Give yourself a 5-minute window to wait, and then ask yourself again in 5 minutes, because that's building that muscle in your brain to decide very intentionally, do I want this and is this the best thing for me? I just use alcohol because that's a very easy one for almost everybody to understand. So the key there is self-regulation, to start working the self-regulation muscle, the emotional regulation, the intellectual regulation, and the physical regulation. Now you can use the physical by working out, right? And doing one more rep, you get really, really tired. But I find the emotional and the intellectual are the more powerful ones, because the biggest gap I see in almost all entrepreneurs in their business is a lack of emotional mastery. And if we could get that one thing to more entrepreneurs, they can manage the heck out of their businesses. They try to manage other people's emotions all day long on their team. But if we could get them to emotionally manage themselves, they would have an insane edge in business.
I 110% agree. Why is there this perception that, especially as males, showing feelings can indicate weakness, or being in touch with my emotional self is weakness?
Well, I think it's been conditioned by society for so long. I mean, almost every man I know, he always tells me that he feels finally very safe to have this conversation, because he's like, I know you're not going to judge me if I cry, or I'm not going to get judged if I show my emotions. But most men, you know, their dads told them not to cry, or their moms told them not to cry, or not to show any emotion, or that it wasn't appropriate or wasn't right. So imagine, as that little kid, this is an example of a trauma pattern. Your mom tells you not to cry, or that it's not okay to cry. So you decide, I'm never going to cry again because I don't want anyone to have control over me. Versus as an adult, realizing if I can be vulnerable and show my emotions, I have more power in who I attract and how I attract them. So most men have shut down on probably 50% of their power because they're not able to emotionally manage themselves and manage their emotions and show up vulnerably. So for almost all the men I've ever worked with, whether they like it or not, I'm like, we're going to dive into this emotional state piece, because the more emotionally connected you are and the more you master that, the more you will build a team of incredibly loyal, high-performing individuals who will do everything for you, who will run through walls for you. And that is what is needed to excel in business.
Oh, man, I love that. You got me ready to run through a brick wall here. Oh, I love that. I love it. Well, Annie, I could talk to you for hours, honestly. This is something that I think, because of just the nature of it, it's less tangible and it's not necessarily something that people know how to measure. It can be measured, but people don't know how to measure it. So I think that there's an inherent, I don't need that right now, maybe tomorrow type of feeling to doing this deep work. What are some of the ways that you can measure progress when somebody's going through your program?
Oh, so there are a bunch of different ways, because again, I'm a little bit more of that methodical person. I like to be able to track things. And so just to give you an example, there was a gentleman who went through his first session the other day. And for probably half of his session, he kept telling me, he's like, I'm in ecstasy right now. He's like, how did I do this? How did I create this in my brain? How am I so happy? He's like, this is so wild. Does this happen to everyone? And I'm like, it tends to happen to almost everybody. So you start noticing daily that you have a higher level of energetic output and you have a higher level of connection to yourself, which is, again, if energy is everything, it's a higher level of attraction of abundance. So that's one piece. Most people tell me they end up making more money. They're engaged in less lawsuits. They're engaged in less conflict over that time window. And the other thing this gentleman told me after his first session, he was like, Annie, that book you told me to read, I read it. And I've dramatically changed how I'm interacting with my wife. And she loves it. She loves it. Where was this like 20 years ago? So I like seeing big change in business. You start making more money. You start making better decisions. I like seeing big change in relationships. You feel more connected. You're more intimate. You have more sex and connection with your spouse. And you have better communication, which is always key. And then with your family, your kids feel more connected to you. They want to spend more time with you. And you want to spend more time with them because you're becoming more real and more synced up to the energy that is you. So I would say that's how we typically will track it. And then obviously people will share the changes they're seeing as they're going through this in business or in just relationships they're in.
Yeah, I love how this work is applicable to every single part of your life, right? And if you go and get a business coach or a fitness coach, of course, maybe there's a little bit of spillover into other areas of your life, but it's very hyper-focused on one thing. When you're working on your mindset and you're going through this work, every single part of your life benefits.
Every part is. Yes. Yes. And then even what I love about it is even your neurochemistry changes because we're rewiring patterns that have been there for so long. And one of the things that I use a lot are these, they're basically sprays that calm the nervous system. But when people use these sprays, they tell me they feel more connected to something higher. They feel like they're more calm when normally they would be very reactive or triggered by something. They feel like they sleep more deeply. So there's just such a wide variety of changes. And if you're aware of the changes that are happening, and I have almost every client track all changes across their sleep patterns, their emotional state, their intellectual state, their physical state, and their connection within their team, you see pretty big changes across the board as they go through the process.
Incredible. Incredible. How can somebody book a session with you? Where do they go?
Well, they can either go to my website, which is northstarleadershipschool.com, or they can reach out to me directly at annie@northstarleadershipschool.com. Or what I love even more is when people just go to my Instagram, which is northstar.annie, A-N-N-I-E, and send me a message and just let me know what's going on in your life. And from there, you know, the journey begins and it gets really exciting because you're opening up to all the possibility that's potentially there and waiting for you that you might never have had access to before.
Love it. So Annie, for everybody listening, we'll link that stuff in the show notes down below so you can sync up with Annie and really change your life. I want to end with one final question, which is, what is the cost of not doing this? What is the cost of something like this with you your whole life?
I think for the people that I've observed who carry the cost from my perspective is there's a lot more suffering than you need to experience in this life. There's a lot more sadness. There's a lot more misery. There's a lot more negative self-talk and self-doubt. And honestly, I think that the level of success that you'll experience is dramatically affected by whether or not you do this work. Because if you think about it, if everybody else in your space is not doing the work and you are the one that is, you're going to have the ability to perceive more in the world around you, go after things that they couldn't, and to really step into your calling, which is why we're all here. So I think that if you can look at your life that way and be like, I want to go at 100%, I want to go all in on my life, this gives you a chance to do that. For the people that get stuck and they're not able to, maybe in this version of their life, they really want to experience suffering. I've seen that. A lot of people are really addicted to suffering and addicted to the pain and addicted to the victim feeling. And until they're ready to let go of that, they won't make any change.
Absolutely incredible, Annie. Thank you for coming on the show. And guys, I mean, I'm just giddy with excitement about just all the ways that I can apply this in my life. And I know the listeners will feel the same. So thank you so much for coming on the show.
Oh, you're so welcome. And if the listeners want, I'd be happy to give them. I've got this PDF that gives you sort of rapid response tools to how to manage your state. So I can make sure that you have that too, just to give that to anyone who's interested. It's sort of that quick way to move their brains forward.
Absolutely. We'll link that as well in the show notes, guys. Well, until the next one. Peace.
All right. Thank you so much.